I would like to welcome Dr. Mark Allen Derry to the program. Mark Allen, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Ed.
Yeah. Mark Allen is an infectious disease physician in New Orleans. He also owns a radio station, which I'm so impressed with that. Anyway, we want to talk about the new vaccine mandate that came out a little while ago under the authorship of RFK Jr. And there's been a lot of criticism, and some of it from informed sources, some of it just from concerns of, you know, people on the street. But I thought getting your take on it as an infectious disease physician would be really helpful. What are your thoughts, Mark Allen?
So what essentially happened, and we saw a little bit more movement just in the last couple days, just when they're talking about polio vaccine. So we'll put a pin in that, and I'm going to circle back to that vaccine in a moment. But essentially, because of the largesse of the U.S. and the unevenness of the healthcare system, especially the delivery of the healthcare system, we've always kind of, we public health practitioners, infectious disease doctors, pediatricians, we've always kind of opted or practiced in the sense of we're going to try to prevent as many potential illnesses as possible. And this is why the newborn vaccine schedule has more vaccines, let's say, than the country they were referring to, which was Denmark, in which has far less childhood vaccines. And that's largely because it's a much more of a homogenous society. In other words, people's access to healthcare system is much, much better than ours. They just don't have the same healthcare problems. Certainly, when we talk about social determinants of health, poverty, lack of education, things that could impact people's health care later, those things aren't there because of their high quality and their high standard of living. So what essentially RFK and his group of non-infectious disease and public health scientists, they may be doctors or have PhDs and they may be scientists of some sort, but certainly nowhere in the mainstream of what we refer to as science. Certainly what we refer to as wingnuts, let's just say, or people who just okay. are not in the mainstream of science. So what they essentially do is they are recommending a new schedule in which various vaccines have been eliminated. That is hepatitis A, and we can talk about these in a moment, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, rotavirus, meningococcal virus, and I think off the top, hepatitis A, B, rotavirus, meningococcus, and there's another one or two that they're also recommending. Now, the reason why this is an issue and why this is a bad, bad issue is that, for example, hepatitis B, which is something that's oftentimes transmitted from mother to child, in the U.S. that can be transmitted just even through a couple drops of blood. So you could be at a child care, and if somebody's bleeding, there could be some transmission of blood or what have you. And it has saved about 30,000 cases of hepatitis B, which could lead to liver failure, liver cancer, and then ultimately death. So even though the numbers are small, when we talk about the large, you know, 330 million people, 30,000 may seem small, but when we're talking about saving the life of children, this is an incredibly important function. The rotavirus vaccine, for example, is also the virus that causes just immense vomiting. Oh, I remember COVID and RSV, and flu. Okay, we'll talk about those in a second.
Yeah.
So the rotavirus vaccine is a virus that causes GI, you know, sickness. This is, you may eat something, you know, somewhere, and then 2 days later, you have intractable nausea, vomiting, and then it persists for a couple days.
Been there, done that.
In children, this could lead to significant dehydration and ultimately death. So the fact that they remove that, again, it doesn't make sense. These are vaccines that are there to help children.
So
RSV vaccine, which prevents children from getting the RSV virus, which also could lead to respiratory issues, put them in a hospital and potentially die as well. So you could see these are vaccines that have been scientifically shown to be appropriately placed on the vaccine schedule. And moreover, every single professional entity, including mine, the one I belong to, Infectious Disease Society of America, but every professional entity has rejected those recommendations and have asked pediatricians to continue the previous recommendations as they stood before RFK got involved.
So if it doesn't make sense scientifically, how do we explain it? Why are they doing this?
Well, you know, what we are seeing is what COVID showed us very, very clearly was that the public health infrastructure is something that we have been talking as public health practitioners has been very, very threadbare to begin with. Unfortunately, a lot of money goes into it. It's completely disjointed. There's hundreds and hundreds of public health departments that are all across the country that are completely disjointed and not connected to one another. I mean, we learned during COVID, they still use faxing, right? They still needed paper charts. I mean, this is how, unfortunately, sometimes our public health system is been. The investments have been very poor.
Right.
But since we have seen RFK coming in and the decisions that have been made, I mean, one of the decisions that they decided to do was stop following the H5N1. That's the bird flu virus that can cause significant death. And we've seen some cases of death here in the U.S., certainly around the world. Since 2002, 2003, since we've been following bird flu, there's been like the mortality rate is 50, that's 50%. And we just stopped following it. One of the decisions that got made was to stop putting investment into the research, into the mRNA vaccine that can save people's lives if we do see a bird flu outbreak. And what we have seen is evidence that the bird flu is now mutating into other strains.
Right.
But we're not following it as a government entity. The rest of the world is looking at us and through scientific articles kind of imploring upon us to please pay attention, because what could potentially happen are outbreaks. So to answer your question, what do I think is happening? You know, in light of what we've seen in the last couple of weeks of what we've seen in Minneapolis, and, you know, what I am about to say, you know, may sound a little kind of, you know, extreme, but I really do feel very, you know, secure in my beliefs here. And I thought about it before we saw the killings of Renee Good and we saw the killings of Alex Preddy, the ICU nurse. But what we are seeing is a rapid dismantling of the public health system in such the threads that they're pulling, the pieces of the Jenga game that is the public health system are so they are so important to the structure of the system. I think they want to see what Naomi Klein, the writer, has referred to as a viral collapse. They don't mind if there could be a large H5N1 epidemic, or they don't mind if there is influenza that's transmitted and people are sick as a result of that. I think that if they are willing to show us that they are openly fine with killing citizens in the streets of Minneapolis, that I think we can use that as an analogy to see that they are okay with dismantling the public health system so that it doesn't serve us well.
So you're saying that they would be okay with an epidemic?
I think they are trying to encourage one.
And why? That's an extreme form of psychosis.
That's the easiest question to answer, because the populace that's sick and can't be out protesting and staying at home or scared to be sick remains vulnerable and is easy to rule over.
Hmm. So chronic disease or infectious disease in this case becomes a tool of
particularly, but the same thing when you look at reproductive rights. I mean, if you are able to keep families at home having to care for children, rather than being able to choose to have an abortion if you wanted to because you didn't feel like it was right for you or wasn't right for your family services. But again, I do believe that what we see with the elimination of reproductive rights is the same thing. I think that keeping people out of the streets or protesting because they're too scared to be out there, one, because they could be killed, two, because there are infectious diseases that are transmitting, or three, you just have kids at home that you need to make sure there's food on the table. And if you look at all elements, I mean, we're seeing this, we're seeing the rapid dismantling of the education system, of the finance system, the banking system. the rapid dismantling of our society, I think, is really largely intended to make, I think, ultimately it difficult to have an election in the midterms, and then ultimately in 2 years after that. So yes, I really do believe that we are seeing this rapid dismantling of the healthcare system by some of the decisions that are getting made, and just so that they can continually see people sick.
And so, you know,
rather than being healthy.
Somebody like Stephen Miller, I could see him subscribing to all kinds of horrible tactics in order to gain this sense of political and economic superiority. Is RFK really in on that, or is he just a dupe who's being played by these powers to make these recommendations that play into that bigger scenario?
It's an impossible question to answer.
I know.
I know. I think that power corrupts, you know, and it corrupts powerfully. You know, I think that RFK just is in a position to, I'll just for a quick second, I'll bite. I think he never was what his father and uncles were. I think maybe he really wanted to be that impactful and influential of a person. And had he stopped 10 or 15 years ago, he would have succeeded as
right.
a great career as an environmental scientist or attorney rather, and did good work, right, in New York.
Yeah.
But I think he wanted to have a greater impact. And I think that he just basically flipped sides, joined the dark forces. And he is having, and he will have a tremendous impact. I don't know how much time we have. If I have another minute, let me explain to you another thing that they recently are doing by pulling out of the WHO, which just happened a couple days ago.
That's the World Health Organization.
The World Health Organization. Let me tell you why that's important. Well, last year, RFK completely dismantled the ACIP, which is the Committee on Immunization Practices, okay? And that had 17 amazing infectious disease doctors, epidemiologists. These were the top of the top of the top, right? And they were the ones that created the flu vaccine, amongst other things. They were the ones that created the ingredients that went into the flu vaccine every year. Well, this year they used a different group. They fired everybody. They got this new group of quacks that we see now. We're seeing all these ridiculous recommendations that they're making. But last year, what they did was they just took the recipe from the WHO. They basically took what the WHO was going to do, and that's what we're using this year. We see the vaccine is very good. We're seeing a new virus kind of emerged out of nowhere that we're kind of dealing with, but whatever. Now that we have stepped away from the WHO, we are no longer going to be sharing information back and forth. And so I don't know how in the next couple of weeks, because usually the vaccine the ingredients, the various strains that they put into the annual vaccine starts getting prepared between January and February. Now that we've pulled out of the WHO, I don't know what we're going to do for the flu vaccine for next year. And again, if it doesn't end up being a really good one, I believe that they are very much like, you know, we tried, rather than really putting their all into it.
Well, one final question, Mark Allen, just to be really clear about this. The vaccines that we're talking about, rotavirus, influenza, COVID, I believe, hepatitis A and B, and they're not being outlawed, of course. They're really shifting the categorization of those vaccines as recommended to not recommended, correct? I mean, people can still get them?
Yes. Yes. So the fear was that if it didn't come from that recommendation, that the insurance companies would stop paying for them. And that still may be come to pass. As of right now, the recommendations from all medical societies are to continue with the previous immunization schedule that existed prior to as it stands now. How insurance companies may respond to it later, that's difficult to kind of say.
Okay.
But as of right now, all we can do is encourage people to do it, because the science is very clear on this too, Ed. That's very interesting, that if kids start missing vaccines by the time that they're 2 months, that just missing 2 months is a predictor that they will then down the line be missing a lot of their vaccines and they'll be poorly vaccinated. Yeah. So just trying to make sure you get all the vaccines on schedule as it has been previously recommended is very important, because again, if you are not vaccinated by 2 months, that is a predictor that you will be poorly, that your child will be poorly vaccinated.
Well,
I think that they know that, and they're trying to get people to that so that they will ultimately be poorly vaccinated.
Dr. Derry, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Folks, we've been talking with Mark Allen Derry, an infectious disease physician in New Orleans, Louisiana.